From the evidence of the faith of God's elect, John Owen. Faith will evidence itself by a diligent, constant endeavor to keep itself in all grace and do exercise in all ordinances of divine worship, private and public. This is a touchstone of faith and spiritual obedience, the most intimate and difficult part of this exercise. Where this is not, there is no life in the soul. There are two things in which men do or may deceive themselves in this. First, abounding in the outward performance of duties or a multiplication of them. By this, hypocrites have in all ages deceived themselves. And it was a covering that the Church of Rome provided for their apostasy from the gospel. An endless multiplication of religious duties was that which they trusted to and boasted in. And we may find those daily that pretend a conscience as to the constant observation of outward duties, and yet will abstain from no sin that comes in the way of their lusts. And men may, and do oftentimes, abide constantly in them, especially in their families and in public, yea, multiply them beyond the ordinary measure, hoping to countenance themselves in other lusts and neglects by it. Number two, assistance of gifts in the performance of them. But as this may be where there is not one dram of grace, saving grace, so when rested in, it is a most powerful engine to keep the soul in formality, to ruin all beginnings of grace, and to bring an incurable hardness on the whole soul. Wherever faith is in sincerity, it will constantly labor, endeavor, and strive to fill up all duties of divine worship with the living, real, hard acting of grace. And where it does not so, where this is not attained, it will never suffer the soul to take any rest or satisfaction in such duties, but will cast them away as a defiled garment. He that can pass through such duties without a sensible endeavor for the real exercise of grace in them, and without self-abasements on the performance of them, will hardly find any other clear evidence of saving faith in himself. There are three evils that have followed the ignorance or neglect or weariness of this exercise of faith, which have proved the ruin of multitudes. 1. There has been the occasion and original of all false worship in the world, with the invention of those superstitious rites and ceremonies in which it consists. For men, having lost the exercise of faith and the ordinances of worship that are of divine institution, they find the whole of it to be useless and burdensome to them, for without this constant exercise of faith there is no life in it, nor satisfaction to be obtained by it. They must therefore have something in it, or accompanying of it, which may entertain their minds and engage their affections to it. If this had not been done, it would have been utterly deserted by the most. On this were invented forms of prayer in great diversity, with continual diversions and avocations of the mind from what is proposed, because it cannot abide in the pursuit of anything spiritual without the exercise of faith. Some entertainment by the mere performance, and makes it think there is something where indeed is nothing. Hereunto are added outward ceremonies of vestments, postures, and gestures of veneration to the same end. There is no other design in them all but to entertain the mind and affections with some complacency and satisfaction in outward worship upon the loss or lack of that exercise of faith, which is the life and soul of it in believers. And as any persons decay in this, they shall find themselves insensibly sinking down into the use of these lifeless forms, or that exercise of their natural faculties and memory, which is not one jot better. Yea, by this means some from an eminency in spiritual gifts and the performance of duties by virtue of them have sunk into an Ave Maria or a Credo as the best of their devotion. Secondly, this has caused many to turn aside, to fall off from and forsake the solemn ordinances of divine worship, and to betake themselves to vain imaginations for relief and trembling, enthusiastical singing and feigned raptures. From hence have so many forsaken their own mercies to follow after lying vanities. They kept for a while to the observance of the divine institutions of worship, but not having faith to exercise in them, by which alone they are life and power, they became useless and burdensome to them. They can find neither sweetness, satisfaction, nor benefit in them. It is not possible that so many in our days, if ever they had tasted of the old wine, should so go after new. If ever they had experience of that savor, power, and life, which is in the ordinances of divine worship, when acting and enlivened by the exercise of faith, should forsake them for that which is nothing. They went out from us, but they were not of us, for if they had been of us, they would have continued with us. Had they known it, they would have not have crucified the Lord of glory. This, therefore, is the true reason why so many in our days, after they have for a season abode under, and in the observation of the gospel ordinances of worship, have fallen off from them. Namely, not having faith to exercise in them, nor endeavoring after it, they did really find no life in them, nor benefit by them. Number 3, some on the same ground fall into profaneness, pretending to take up with a natural religion without any instituted worship at all. Of this sort of persons we have multitudes in the days in which we live. Having nothing of the light of faith, they can see no form or comeliness in Christ, nor anything that belongs to Him. By these means are souls every day precipitated into ruin. In this, therefore, I say, true faith will evidence itself in all darknesses and distress whatsoever. It will always endeavor to keep itself in all other graces in a due and constant exercise, in all duties of worship, private and public. It may sometimes be weakened in its acting and operations. It may be under decays. It may be as asleep, and that not only as to particular duties and seasons, but as to the inward habitual frame of the mind. But where it is true and genuine, it will shake itself out of this dust, cast off the sin that does so easily beset us, and stir up itself with all might and contention to its duty. Wise, therefore, we will watch and take care that we lose not this evidence of faith. It will stand us instead when, it may be, all other things seem to be against us. Some have been relieved by the remembrance of this exercise of faith when they have been at the door of desperation. Such or such a season they had experience of the work of faith and prayer has been their relief. An experience of this is a jewel which may be of no great use whilst it lies by you locked up in a cabinet, but which you will know the worth of if ever you come to need bread for your lives. It is therefore worthwhile to inquire what we ought to do, or what means we ought to use that we may keep up faith to its due exercise in all the parts of divine worship, so as that it may give us a comforting evidence of itself in times of temptation and darkness. And to this end, the ensuing directions may be of use. Number 1. Labor to have your hearts always affected with a due sense of the infinite perfections of the divine nature and all our approaches to Him, especially of His sovereign power, holiness, immensity, and omnipresence. And this will produce in us also a sense of infinite distance from Him. As this is necessary from the nature of the things themselves, so the Scripture gives us such descriptions of God as are suited to and generate this frame in us. This is that which Joshua aimed to bring the people to when he designed to engage them in the service of God in a new manner, Joshua 24:19-22, and that which the Apostle requires in us, Hebrews 12:28-29. And to the same end, glorious descriptions and appearances of God are multiplied in Scripture. If we fail in this, if we do not on all occasions fill our minds with reverential thoughts of God, His greatness and His holiness, faith has no foundation to stand upon in its exercise and the duties of worship. This is the only inlet into the due exercise of grace. Where it is lacking, all holy thoughts and affections are shut out of our minds. And where it is present, it is impossible but that there will be some gracious working of heart in all our duties. If we are empty of this in our entrance of duties, we shall be sure to be filled with other things which will be clogs and hindrances to us. But reverential thoughts of God and our approaches to Him will cast out all superfluity of naughtiness and dissipate all carnal formal frames, which will vitiate all our duties. Keep your hearts, therefore, under this charge and all your accesses to God, and it will constantly open a door to that exercise of faith which we inquire after. With this, we shall be affected with a sense of our infinite distance from Him. which is another means to stir up faith to its due exercise in reverence and godly fear. So Abraham was affected in Genesis 18, verse 27. This is that which the wise man directs us to in Ecclesiastes 5, 2. Carnal boldness and the lack of these things ruins the souls of men, rendering all their duties of worship unacceptable to God and unprofitable to themselves. Secondly, affect your hearts with a due sense of the unsuitableness of our best duties to His holiness and majesty, and of His infinite condescension and the acceptance of them. Suppose there is in any of our duties the best and the most lively exercise of grace that we can attain to, the most fervency in prayer with the most diligent attendance of our minds, the most humility and contrite trembling in hearing the word, the most devout affection of our minds and other parts of worship. Alas, what is all this to God? How little does it answer His infinite holiness? Our goodness extends not to Him. There are no measures. There is no proportion between the holiness of God and our best duties. There is iniquity in our holy things. They have need of mercy and pardon, of cleansing and justification by the blood of Christ, no less than our persons. And an infinite condescension it is in God to take any notice of us or them. Yea, it is that which we must live in all holy admiration of all our days. Now if it be thus with our best duties, in our best frames, what an outrage of sloth and negligence is it if we bring the carcass of duties to God for lack of stirring up faith to His due exercise in them. How great is this folly! How unspeakable is the guilt of this negligence! Let us therefore keep a sense of it upon our hearts, that we may always stir up ourselves to our best in duties of religious worship. For a negligence in this, or the lack of stirring up faith to a due exercise in all duties of worship, is the highest affront we can put upon God, arguing a great regardlessness of Him. Whilst it is so with us, we have not, we cannot have, a due sense of any of the divine perfections, of the divine nature. We turn God, what lies in us, into an idol, supposing that He may be put off with the outside and appearance of things. This the Apostle cautions us against, Hebrews 4, 12 and 13, and is that which God detests, in Isaiah 29, 13. And He pronounces Him a deceiver and cursed, who offers to Him the lame and the blind, while He has a male in the flock, Malachi 1, 14. Yet thus it is with us in some degree whenever we are negligent in stirring up faith into its proper exercise in holy duties. That alone renders them the male of the flock. Without it they are lame and blind, a corrupt thing. It is a sad thing for men to lose their duties, to be at charge and trouble in the multiplication of them, and attendance to them to no purpose. Oh, how much more sad is it when they are all provocations of God's glory, when they tend to increase the formality and hardness of their hearts towards the ruin of their souls. Stand in awe, therefore, and sin not. Commune with your own hearts. Cease not until on all occasions you bring them into that exercise of faith in which you may glorify God as God and not deal with Him as an idol. Number four, to the same end, keep your souls always deeply affected with the sense of the things about which you are to treat with God and all the duties of His worship. They are referred to two heads. One, those which concern His glory. Two, those which concern our own souls. Without a constant due sense of these things on our hearts, faith will not act itself aright in any of our duties. Without this intimate concern and deep sense, we know not whether we need faith in our prayers or have an exercise of it. Formality will drown all. The best of our prayers is but an expression to God of what sense we have of these things. If we have none, we don't pray at all, whatever we say or do. But when these things dwell on our minds, when we think on them continually, when our hearts cleave to them, faith will be at work in all our approaches to God. Can you not pray? Change your hearts with these things, and you will learn so to do. Number five, watch diligently against those things which you find by experience are apt to obstruct your fervency and duties. Such are indisposition through the flesh, or weariness of the flesh, distracting, foolish imaginations, the occasions of life revolving in our minds, and the like. If such impediments as these be not removed, if they be not washed against, they will influence the mind and suffocate the exercise of faith in it. Number 6, above all, the principal rule in this is that we would always carefully remember the concern of Christ in these duties with respect to his office. He is a high priest over the house of God. Through him and under his conduct are we always to draw nigh to God, and his work it is to present the prayers and supplications of the church to God. Now we have no way to come to Christ for his assistance in the discharge of his office on our behalf, but by faith, and in all our duties of holy worship, we make a profession of our doing so, of our coming to God by him as our high priest. If we endeavor not in this to have faith and exercise, how do we mock or make a show to him of doing that which indeed we endeavor not to do? There can be no greater contempt of Christ in his office, nor greater undervaluation of his love, but a due consideration of it, namely of the concern of Christ in all our duties with respect to the office which he discharges for us in heaven, is that which directly leads faith into its proper exercise. For through him, and that in discharge of his office, we believe in God. And when the mind is exercised with due thoughts of him, if there be anything of true saving faith in the heart, it will act itself to a blessed experience. These things may be of use to stir us up and guide us to that exercise of faith in all holy duties, an experience in which abiding in the soul will evidence the truth of it, to our support and comfort in all temptations and distresses. Some, it may be, will say that their gift in prayer is mean and weak, that they cannot express themselves with earnestness and fervency, and so know not whether there be any faith and exercise in their prayers or not. I answer, there is nothing at all in this, for grace may be very high where gifts are very low, and that frequently. And it may be others will complain of the meanness of their gifts on whom they attend in prayer, which is such as they cannot accompany them in the exercise of any grace. I answer, there is no doubt but that there is a great difference in the spiritual gifts of men in this matter, some being much more effectual to edification than others. Take care that you are called in providence and duty to join with them whom you intend, that you do not first voluntarily choose that which is to your disadvantage and then complain of it. Be their gifts never so mean, if grace in their own hearts be exercised by it, so it may be in ours, where there is no evidence of it, I confess the case is hard. Let the mind be still fixed on a manner of things uttered in prayer, so as to close with and act faith about what is the real object of it, and it will find its proper work in that duty.